And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and the show is for the week of May 15th, 2020. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Well, now we've progressed into mid-May under our lockdown conditions. You're still doing okay. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
I'm still hanging in there. Yep.
Good. And dear listener, we hope that you all out there are doing well. We know things are tough. We hope we can give you some comfort, something to think about as you sit in social isolation. So Mariah, there is so much happening. Of course, the coronavirus economic devastation has steals all the oxygen in the room, right? As last time I looked, the ticker on the TV said there were 20 million people out of jobs, right? And some, you know, more than 80,000 people dead. Again, I mean, everything's horrific. The 20 million people out of jobs presents its own challenge. You know, even 20 million people basically stopping what they're doing sends the economy into a, I don't know, full stop, right? I mean, things are not so hot right now.
Right.
And of course, Congress has come back with multiple now trillion-dollar packages that are aimed to try to protect people. And why you want to protect people? Because this is a, what do they call it, a demand-side recession, right? All of a sudden, it's not like the economy, I mean, everyone was just forced to stop and go home, right? Everyone went home, so Dunkin' Donuts, not as many people driving to Dunkin', demanding coffee from Dunkin' Donuts, right?
Yeah.
And so you can't, how can you blame the people who are out of work? Blame the people that are out of work here. And so the question comes, what are we going to do to bring the economy back, right? And this, of course, is a climate question. Nancy Pelosi, even as we speak, is contemplating, I think it's another package of between $2 and $3 billion, right? And this is aimed at, I think they're talking about giving people $2,000 a month or, you know, a continuing payment so that you can pay the rent for the next however many months until the economy comes back. That's all good. One of the things from a climate hawk's perspective, we've touched on this multiple times, but I think the question is so enormous that we need to keep thinking about it, is as we spend these trillions of dollars, what's the end game, right? What are we building towards? Are we building towards the economy that existed in January 2020, where we were just doing all the things we were doing in January 2020 with the horrific inequality and the social and environmental destruction, or do we take this as a reset, this stoppage as a reset to do something different? And I would say that the analogy to 1933 is legitimate, right? The economy's basically dead in the water. You have to do something to pick up, get the economy going again. In 1933, Roosevelt put people back to work building the Hoover Dam. Right. All those public work projects, they weren't make work. I mean, it was infrastructure that was needed for the country, but it was also, you know, stuff they were dreaming up how to do. They had people, I was out in Los Angeles last fall. They have beautiful WPA artwork on the post office. These gorgeous paintings in the that are preserved now. They're art pieces. They're beautiful. But I mean, it's putting people to work. So this is a long-winded way of getting around to the idea of the Green New Deal. Right, which is certainly presents itself as an opportunity, as a rallying point, as a place for people to get a job, get the economy moving again, and build a different future. Have you heard that argument anywhere, Mariah?
I think it's a really good one.
Yeah, I think that this has been proposed. We've talked about it on this show. I guess the latest development, the reason we're back at it, is that there some articles we'll put into the blog. But over in Europe, They have a creatively named program called the Green Deal, since they never needed a New Deal. They had the Marshall Plan, but now they have the Green Deal. Anyway, that Green Deal proposes spending a lot of money on clean energy. And, of course, the Green Deal in Europe predates the coronavirus thing. But in the place where we're all shut down now, all of a sudden that effort is being looked at askance because people think it's going to cost jobs. It's going to cost money. It's going to cost jobs. Can't we just go back to the way things were, however that was? And in parallel, on this side of the Atlantic, the conservative wing of American politics is taking aim at the Green New Deal as well and saying, oh, if you like the coronavirus shutdown, you're going to love the Green New Deal, which makes my head explode. That's not an image I want to send out into podcast land of my head exploding, people talking about that. But it is, so I guess, so the question comes, is almost a political question. How do progressives present a Green New Deal, not necessarily as a, you know, a climate thing we're obligated to do, but as an opportunity to climb out of the what apparently is going to be the Trump depression?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's sort of the fundamental issue, right? It's all about how you I mean, I don't want to say spin things, but it's all about how you talk about things, right? The famous, you know, if you call it a death tax, it becomes a lot less palatable. So, you know, that's people who don't want you to like the death tax, that's what they put it out there. They make it sound like you're being punished for dying. And, you know, in the same way, by saying, hey, you are uncomfortable right now, America, right? So this is what the Green New Deal will feel like. Well, that really appeals to people's emotions, and they know what this currently feels like, and they know they don't like it. And so they're really playing off of that. And so we just have to figure out how to flip it and say, the right words that make it sound like, actually, no, the Green New Deal will help get you out of this. You know, I mean,
I agree with you. I think that the framing and the way it's spoken about is incredibly important. And I don't think it's spin. I think we have to find, I mean, we are interested in being, well, not interested. We are inherently honest. We carry our integrity into this discussion. Right? But the question is how to find the aspects, the honest aspects of a Green New Deal that are most appropriate to discuss when you have an economic downturn.
I think I use the term spin, not necessarily in a pejorative way, but just because, you know, you think about like climate change and how there are so many facts on our side, right? And we just thought, well, if we just tell the facts and just tell people how important it is, people will act on that, right? But that it doesn't work that way. You really do have to find the right tune to play on the radio, right? The right words to use to describe it in a way that resonates with people, and to find the connection points within an issue that will get people motivated. So with climate change, for example, you know, the big talking points about polar bears on melting ice caps, that didn't sway a large swath of the population, and it kind of made it this sort of
elitist kind of thing.
So great that you have time to care about the polar bears. You know, I don't. That's not a high concern, right? Whereas when it was sort of couched more in the language of, well, it causes air pollution, it causes premature deaths due to air pollution, it's making our children sick, it's making our world unhealthy and uninhabitable for, you know, us as humans as well. We're part of this ecosystem. That appealed more broadly and more effectively to people to get on board with the initiatives. So I think that's really important, is sort of finding out what it is that really connects with the majority of people who will act on it.
So let's pretend I'm George Soros. I have $1 billion I'm going to give you for inventing the campaign to make...
Yay.
Well, yeah,
right,
there you go.
Earth one from Bezos, right?
How would you pitch it? I mean, would you even call it the Green New Deal? I mean, at this point in time, right? I mean, it's like there's a new path forward, right? There's a new way to do things, right? There's a new, I don't know, I mean, just sort of brainstorming, but it seems to me that the climate associations of the Green New Deal are real, but age where 20% of the people, or 20 million people, are out of work. It's jobs. I mean, and that's the thing that seems attractive, and the reason people would, all those other people out there would want to support such a thing, right?
Yeah, and I think that I do think that the term green has in of itself has become pejorative in some way, right? It can be a term that people think it's like superfluous. It's sort of the nice it's nice to do when you have the time or money to do that. And so I've never liked the term Green New Deal, even though I've you know there are reasons why it's good as well. But I do think that detracts from all of the other things that it does, in addition to solving some of a lot of the, you know, environmental justice and the climate change and all. It attacks many, many di not attacks, it helps to engender a better world in so many different ways.
Well, I guess the question is, would you, so we have argued for a stimulus, I have argued for a stimulus package. So all these trillions of dollars we're bouncing around now, these should include, there are segments of the, we'll call it the GND, so we don't have to say that terrible green word, right? The GND includes two ideas that I think are fairly appropriate for the current moment. One, and they are in the GND because they support the process of getting the economy going with the kinds of jobs that are under the GND. But the two things that are out there is there's Medicare for All, which I think in this day and age, forget the Medicare for All as a name, but it's like everyone should have health care, right? And it's like these packages that the Congress is coming up with should say, look, until this coronavirus thing is behind us and sets some criteria, right? Everybody gets free health care. Boom, right? And when we're out of the coronavirus, we'll come back and talk about it. So see where we are, right? You'll never go back. But I mean, you say, right now we have an emergency. People need to they need medical care. We give it to them. And the other thing is, when you have 20 million people out of work, you have what's called a jobs guarantee, right? Where everyone is literally, if you're an American citizen, you can walk down to a local place. The equivalent in the various articles we'll post, I mean, talk about this could be run like a, you run the public schools, right? It's local jobs. You go there, you say, I need a job. You got a job, right? And you would get paid what amounts to a minimum wage, $15, $17 an hour. You get health care. You get this sort of fundamental minimum. But I mean, that would be very appealing in a circumstance where 20% of the workforce is out of work. I mean, why would that not be a place to begin? Just, so I know when you say jobs guarantee, people's heads, I'm on the people's heads explode imagery. I should put that down. But people don't like jobs guarantee, right? I mean, what do you think, Mariah?
Well, yeah, you know, so in this article that it's an interview, Roberts interviewed Pavlina Cherneva on Vox, and wrote about it on Vox. And they actually mentioned that jobs guarantee is actually more of a it's more bipart has more bipartisan support than like a universal basic income does. And so there is some, you know, there's some reason to think that it could carry both sides. And it's a very well argued, you know, I don't I think before I read this article I might have said, I don't know about a jobs guarantee. But reading this article really brings up a lot of good points about why it could work. And largely the jobs would be guaranteed in arenas of nonprofits, right? So the idea is that you have sort of a nonprofit who needs, you know, X number of workers to do a certain job at a certain time period, and they post that, and they get a big influx of these workers, and then it, you know, it's kind of constantly shifting to the next nonprofit, and you know, this is just one example that they use, but the idea is that you're helping a lot of these companies that don't aren't necessarily bringing in a whole bunch of money for their bottom line, but that are helping to grow something that's bigger than just a bottom line,
and
right?
I think what I saw was a comment in the article saying that nonprofits have a significant amount of the social welfare net that they try to provide. I mean, every food bank, I mean, the food banks across the country are now in desperate need, right? They would, having people to deliver the to deliver food and whatnot is that that's an honest paying job that is not really in competition. You're not going to go to what's it, Blue Apron, if you're out of work, right? You just
right.
you're not going to have food delivered, and so yeah, I mean, I think there are a surprising number of well thought out advantages to a jobs guarantee that far transcend the sort of knee jerk reaction people have that say, oh yeah, you guaranteed a job, you don't show up, you don't, you know, you abuse the opportunity. And
yeah, and you know, one thing that this article pointed out was if we had something set up like this, we would have been able to mobilize people to get to the places that they're most needed right now much more quickly, right? So you would have maybe some people lost their jobs in sort of the restaurant industry, but you could immediately shift them over to be doing food delivery or helping, you know, in hospital work.
Or contract chasing, right? I mean, there's like, what is it, California's got 10,000
yeah.
people, what did I say, contact, yeah.
Contact.
I mean, we have this
yeah,
enormous need,
like,
need to thousands of yeah. people need to go to work to do this.
I know, yeah, they said they need 180,000 people, I think, to do contact tracing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so,
but,
I mean, I think these opportunities are sitting there.
Right. And I think, interestingly, it also helps stabilize the fluctuations in unemployment, right? Because if you have something like this, the article sort of suggesting that unemployment feeds on itself, where, you know, if you have everybody kind of gets unemployed, then it has this ripple effect where, you know, people are unemployed, they can't spend any money, so then they're not buying things, so then there's
more people,
people
get unemployed.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas if you have something like this, where there's as people get they may lose one job, but there's a whole big bank where they can go back out, and so they kind of have a steadier stream of work, which means that they're constantly putting money back into the
right.
economy because they have it to spend, and it offers a much, you know, sort of more predictable
right.
flow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that there is. I mean, one of the things that struck me that I heard. With regard to a jobs guarantee is something that you don't think about very often, but that the current system already uses employment or unemployment basically to manage the economy. And that the current system, as I think everyone is aware, if the economy gets too hot in quotation marks, we raise the interest rates, right? The economic activity slows, the unemployment rate goes up. So, I mean, as it stands now, we are running the economy by crushing people that we lay off and then consider them low value because they're at the low end of the economic totem pole. So just from the, sort of this moral argument, the idea that we should be managing the economy on the backs of the least powerful workers and making them pariahs because they can't get a job, I mean, that all by itself suggests that we ought to be thinking about a jobs guarantee.
Yeah, it seems like a very cruel system.
But I mean, I think it's worthwhile to talk about these things in the context of the coronavirus because, you know, some sort of guarantee of health care for everyone and some sort of guarantee for jobs for everyone seems like a starting place for any sort of long-term economic recovery, just for me, right? And those jobs, you know, providing jobs to people. If the government has to pick jobs, then they could be retrofitting homes and making them more energy efficient, right? That's kind of a side benefit of getting the economy going again.
Absolutely.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to download this. I'm going to record this, send it to the presidential candidates on both sides and offer them our wisdom as to how they can get the country out of the economic doldrums we're headed into. We'll see if Anyway, we got to put it down there, Mariah. Interesting topic that I think We should all be prepared to. It's not going away, just like the coronavirus. I mean, how to recover from the coronavirus is not going away anytime soon, right? And the decisions are being made in Washington in real time, and it's important to participate in that. We'll put up some of these links on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you know how to frame the GND to make it most palatable to the most people, please send it to us at an email, podcast@massclimateaction.net. We would love to know what that plan is. You can listen to this show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or any of the modern podcast distribution apps. We want to thank our dear friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of those things, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that probably includes health care for everyone and a job guarantee, but I'm just saying, plus a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for your economic insight.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.